Hello and welcome to Save Your Game. This is a podcast where I talk to people from in and out of the gaming universe about the games that have dominated and defined their lives. We'll be talking about when they played them, why they played them, and all the things they loved about them. Whether you're a noob or a pro, we'll be talking about a multitude of your favourite games, but in the end, there can be only one. At the end of the episode, I'm going to force my guests to make an agonising decision. They must choose their one game to save for the Save Your Game podcast and be immortalised forever. I'm Frankie Ward, and I'm someone who is lucky enough to talk about video games for a living. From hosting at major esports events, interviewing pro players, or talking about the newest games to hit your gaming platform of choice. As a lifelong gamer, I'm excited to see if my guests had the same experience of growing up obsessed with gaming as I was, and finding out what games they choose as the milestones of their own gaming lives. Now, before we get started, if you love gaming as much as we do, there's a whole load of game-related stuff you can dive into. So make sure you head to redbull.com to keep track of which games get inducted into the Red Bull Save Your Game podcast, latest news on all the episodes, and a whole lot more gaming content from us. My first guest on the show is former League of Legends pro and mid laner for SK Gaming and now owner of one of the biggest esports brands in the world, G2, which he set up with his own player earnings in 2014. Some of you will know him by his in-game name Ocelot, but just as many know him simply as Carlos. Carlos, welcome to Save Your Game.
That's a beautiful intro. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're a fabulous first guest. I hope we did you justice. Well, I do want to ask, though, first of all, do you prefer Carlos or Ocelot?
Honestly, I don't know what to tell you, because when I entered my professional career, everybody knew me as Ocelot, right? And there's a funny thing that happened. Well, it's not that funny back then. It's funny now, which is that all my social media channels and like all my followers went down when I retired from like 1 week to another. I became completely irrelevant. Now it's my job to become relevant to a different audience, or maybe the same audience, but now as a team owner. I'm going to be so good that people will know me as this entrepreneur, esports leader, you can say, and my name is Carlos. So they will know me also as Carlos. And that was my quest, and I think I accomplished it.
I knew there was a reason why you put on spandex and made a workout video. And that was the reason. Well, you are here to discuss some of your favorite games. And at the end of the podcast, I do need to make you decide on just one.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm a horrible person, to be perfectly honest. That's why Red Bull hired me. Before we do get started, I do need to ask what your first gaming memory is. Can you think back that far?
My first gaming experience was actually Half-Life. I'm from a very humble family, right? My dad, electrician, he had a few colleagues, and they were like very tech savvy. My dad as well, right? And they were always, you know, they had some, I don't know, the latest Amstrad and stuff like that, like very old stuff, right? And they were all speaking ICQ, which is sort of like Skype today, right? So one day he comes back from work and says, look, I found this game. It's like the real deal. You know, we're going to play together against each other or against others. And I was like, really? Like, is that possible? You know, I couldn't compute that was possible. I was 11 years old by then. I remember it. Yeah, it was Half-Life. And he played competitively or multiplayer with his friends. I'm assuming, I don't remember it, but I'm assuming the ping was atrocious. The FPS were atrocious, but I guess it was like an experience, you know? And so I was watching him play from his lap. And one day he actually had to go to the restroom and I had to play for him. I never played a video game in computer in my life, but I played for the first time after watching him. I think I knew what was going on. And when he came back, the colleagues of my father were telling him, look, Emilio, why don't you just go and do your son's homework and he plays for you instead, because he's just kicking ass. And you could see when you click tab that I was like doing really well, you know, and I've never played before. I will never forget that moment. And that moment, I guess, taught me, maybe wrongly, but it taught me that I was very good at video games. And that's the thought I always carried with me.
Your dad is the person who's responsible for getting you into them. But what did he think of you making gaming a career?
At first, I would spend a bit less time than later, right, on it. So a lot of times the internet cable was disconnected. And my dad, the electrician that he is, he had to reconnect it when I made peace with them. It was tough sometimes. It was very tough. But I feel like the turning point was when I turned 16, I think it was around that time, I was like, again, going to World of Warcraft events and tournaments and stuff. So I would earn some money here and there. And I remember I earned one tournament, $2,000 actually. And $2,000, it was more than what my mom and dad together earned in a month, right? So I just came in. I mean, I didn't want to buy anything. I didn't need anything, right? I couldn't even drive a car. Like in Europe, you can't even drive a car with 16, right? My parents wouldn't let me have a motorbike because it was too dangerous. So I would just have nothing. That's it. I didn't need anything, right? So I just gave all the money to them. And they were like, shit, all right. This works. You do you, you know? I mean, and I respect that. I feel like kids nowadays need to understand something. Even if you're 15, 16. And yes, your parents have to take care of you until you're 18, I guess, right? But here's the thing. If you want the power to choose what you want to do, you have the responsibility to earn it, right? And that's something that I think I intrinsically learned early on in my career. If I wanted to have the power to choose when I travel, where I travel, where I do with my life, so early on, even before my brain is fully developed, I guess, then I have the responsibility to show my parents the way and that, you know, the path of how I'm going to accomplish it and to help along the way. So yeah, I've tried to be very fair with them. And I think looking back now, back then it didn't feel like that, but looking back now, I appreciate the hardship sometimes that my parents showed, you know, because it showed me that ultimately they love me, of course, but I'm not going to do whatever the hell I want without earning it. And I think that's a value that I've been able to carry over. It's zero entitlement.
Carlos, what is the first game that we're potentially going to be saving today?
I will say Day of Defeat.
Day of Defeat.
Such a great game.
Day of Defeat is a fast-paced tactical shooter themed around World War II and was many older gamers' first competitive shooting experience. With multiple classes allowing for explosive ways to take and hold objectives, Day of Defeat was one of the original trailblazers for first-person team shooters as we know them today and paved the way for games like Counter-Strike and Battlefield in the years to come.
I played for Team Spain. I played international tournaments and I really enjoyed it a lot.
How old were you back then? Was it quite soon after playing Half-Life
Deathmatch?
I'd say,
yeah. It was like maybe like 12 years old, maybe. It was like that long ago.
So there were a lot of LAN cafes and things like that back
then. Oh, yeah, there was. Yeah, exactly. So there was like a lot of, you know, remember CS Gather? Imagine like a Faceit or like an ESEA of many years ago. You could just go there. There was like because there was no competitive ranked queue, right? Like in Counter-Strike or League of Legends or whatever nowadays. So we sort of created, or the community created its own ranking system, right? I was playing this DoD, Day of Defeat, Gathers all day. And I enjoyed it again quite a lot.
But were you playing with people that you knew back then? Or were you simply going out on your own via CS Gather and solo queuing?
I just met people by playing, you know. I got really good really fast, I remember that. And I got into a couple of teams and, yeah, I slowly made myself a name. Not too long ago, I somebody sent me a recording of my fucking voice. Like, so bossy. I hated myself. I was like, yeah, so we should do this, we should do that, Oh my God, like leading the group, leading up like grown-ups, like 24, 27 year olds. And I was like 12. Yeah, I was that kind of guy. And slowly made my name out of playing Day of Defeat and I enjoyed it.
So I'm still curious at how you became someone who was playing for Team Spain and competing at an incredibly high level, age 12. How did you even start playing Day of Defeat?
How do you start? I don't know. You just get better and better and better. And at some point, you play well in the right place at the right time. And that's how people notice you. You know, this is not like soccer, like football, where if you're like incredibly good, you might still not make it because there's a lot of luck involved. A lot of it. I think that with esports, that luck is not quite as needed. I think it's needed, as always. You always need the, you know, to play the right game at the right time. But if you're very, very good, eventually you'll get noticed because you don't play one football game a week. You play 8 games a day or 10 games a day. At some point, like the sample size is too much higher. So it's a very high chance you'll get noticed by the right people if you're just good enough, right? So that's, I guess, what happened.
So Day of Defeat kind of gained in popularity at the same time as Counter-Strike as a mod of the original Half-Life. I imagine not everyone listening to the podcast has played Day of Defeat, and a lot of people might not even have heard of it. So can you kind of give us a bit of an example of what the game was and how a round played out?
Yeah, so imagine something like Medal of Honor or like Call of Duty, but a little bit more realistic, I guess you could say, or like Battlefield. It was like similar genres, right, all together. And it was based on the Second World War, the Allies versus the Axis, and it was like capture the flag, I remember. And there was different maps, different ways of capturing the flag, and it was a mode that I really liked because it's like a sort of deathmatchy. So you die and you respawn again. It was a lot of highlight plays you could do. I'm sure if you look hard enough online, you'll find a couple of video frags from me. But yeah, it's honestly, it was a really, really fun game.
This game is not necessarily a game that reached the potential of games like Counter-Strike, other games that came off mods mm-hmm. like Dota 2, like League of Legends. So why is it still a game that you hold so close to your heart, Carlos?
Well, it's a lot of reasons. I can just tell you the most important ones. Number one, it was the first competitive experience I had that I took really seriously. Like, I was watching demos and stuff. If I would play against a specific team, I would watch how the guy that plays in my position would play so that I can counter him and stuff like that. I've never taken a video game that seriously like I did with Day of Defeat. Number two is because some of my biggest friends online, I met in Day of Defeat, and then we played together a different game that I'll tell you later. I have a lot of fond memories. I just feel like that era, that age in my life was actually, it was very enjoyable, you know, and it was very new to me, and I've learned a lot, and I've laughed a lot, and I've gotten disappointed as well by playing badly sometimes, right? So it's just my first, I guess, my beginnings, you know, in this industry.
You mentioned your biggest friends being these online friends. What was your friendships like outside of the game? Were they people that you'd also play games with?
They were good. I mean, they were good. But there was something about my online friends that just, I don't know, I think it's a lot of the humor. Maybe I got lucky, and the people I happened to play with in Day of Defeat, it was just hilarious. Like, I sometimes have dreams of like conversations I had with them that I'm just still laughing about. Yeah, I don't know. It was very nice people, and I've seen them many times in person as well. I've invited them to Madrid, and we've gone party. I've gone to where they live in Spain as well. I've done all kinds of stuff together. So yeah, honestly, it's actually good to remember this stuff. But yeah, a lot of my best friendships have been made online, and a lot of my best friendships outside of the game, I brought them online as well, which is cool as well.
Have you got any favorite memories from a game of Day of Defeat?
Honestly, I don't think most of them are not apt for this podcast. But let's just say we had a lot of fun.
And you played Grenadier. So there were several different classes you could play in Day of Defeat. Yep. Tell me about that class and why you chose to play Grenadier as opposed to, say, Rifleman or a Sniper. Yeah,
the SMG or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So I also liked Sniper, though. But there's typically, if I remember correctly, there was one Sniper, three, if I remember correctly, Riflers, which is the Grenadier, and two SMGs, if I remember correctly, or one SMG and one heavy. Yeah, one SMG and one heavy, something like that. Like, the maps were typically divided in like three areas, more or less, and I was typically playing one area by myself, and then my teammates were typically going 2-2, right? And so it was a lot of point of congestion around the middle, which is like the plaza. Typically, everybody wants to fight for that. And there were maybe 2-3 people versus 2-3 people, always a lot of congestion. But there was this area that I played, you played alone a lot, right? And you had to like make your own way throughout that right lane, for example, right? You had to know where to wait for the guy, because when you kill him, he will respawn, right? So it depends where you wait from, how, you know, when you go for the flag, he might get a friend to help him to get it back. You know, so you had to always play with that, right? And use your leverage that you created from that side. And typically, the team that won the side heavily typically won the game, because you could just don't allow them to breathe by having too much space from the extreme side of the map. So I guess I always liked roles that had a lot of impact. And I think that specific Grenadier role, as well as the Sniper, had the most impact. And I enjoyed playing them a lot. And I always, I thought I was a better 1v1 player than I was a team player. So I guess that helped.
Have you ever tried playing games like Battlefield to kind of recapture that DoD magic?
Yeah, I have, but it's just too many people. You see what I mean? I just don't want to be one guy out of 40, you know? Like, I want to be the guy that everybody looks at, you know? I want to be, like, the game changer, you know? Maybe that's part of the reason why I just never liked those kind of games.
So no Battle Royale for you? Although you can be the last man standing, to be fair.
Yeah, Battle Royale, it's not as one-dimensional, right? I have zero patience. And typically in a Battle Royale, you need a lot of patience. Like, just walking for 8 minutes, just picking up stuff from the floor is just so unbearable to me. It's just annoying. I just don't like it. I feel like I'm just wasting 5 to 7 minutes of my life every time I start a game.
I feel like I've wasted my time too.
The better you get in those games, the more annoying it is to play. But if you look at Apex, for example, by the end of it, it was like 10 teams alive. And like in this circle, everybody was just waiting in their home, in their house, you know? It was so miserable. There was no fighting. It was only like, let's get lucky with the circle and let's hope they're just not nading you when you try to get out. It's not as fun. It's not as fun. It's very one-dimensional. I much prefer tactical shooters.
I love a bit of watching other people play PUBG, but I don't like playing 35 minutes of Miramar, the desert map, and then just being taken out from behind. And it's like, I have spent 35 minutes not seeing anyone. And
PUBG specifically. Like, whoever plays PUBG, I have a theory. They're serial killers.
Well, now I know why G2 has never had a PUBG team.
We actually had the best PUBG team in Europe, funnily enough.
But where are they now? You cast them to the ether, Carlos.
I apologize again. I meet them sometimes in Valorant, Halo, very often actually.
Try.
And I kick their ass. I remind them, you're just losing against the CEO.
I don't think I'll ever forget the G2 Valorant Ignition tournament where you did shoot your own captain in the head. Poor Mixwell. But I mean, G2, the Valorant team are doing very, very well. So you obviously made the right choice there. Now, heading back to Day of Defeat, even after 20 years, this game and the Source version of the game still has a loyal player base today. So you can find up to 400 players online at any time, Carlos. So maybe you can jump back in.
I have
in.
No idea.
There are.
You know what?
Yeah.
I might as well do. Honestly, I wouldn't mind just hopping in for a couple of rounds.
There's still some populated servers. So jump in with some of those best mates of yours, Carlos, and you might find some people willing to welcome you back to the community that you cruelly abandoned. So you can find out more information at redbull.com/gaming. But for now, Carlos, why should this game be saved for the Red Bull Save Your Game podcast?
Day of Defeat?
Yes.
It probably shouldn't.
That's not part of the show!
It's not the top. It's one of my top five, right? I don't consider it. I think that comparing Day of Defeat with... You can't do that. It's just not possible. It's an insult.
Do you think, though, that this game did have a positive impact on your life? And
yeah,
I guess your future gaming career?
100%. It taught me the values of spending time learning your opponents. It taught me the values of actually working towards getting better, actually. And grinding, you know, with a purpose.
I like it. Carlos, what's the second game you're thinking about saving?
That's gotta be, without a doubt, Counter-Strike.
Counter-Strike!
Counter-Strike is one of the most beloved first-person shooter games in the world. Conceived in 1999, it has been the mainstay of competitive esports ever since. Often described as the ultimate tactical FPS experience, CS has formed lifelong friendships between players and even made some millionaires thanks to its surface simplicity. Plant the bomb or stop it going off. I have a bias towards Counter-Strike. Anyone who knows me will know that. And so one of the things I'm quite keen on is hearing players describe Counter-Strike, because on the surface it just looks like it's a game about taking down terrorists or being a terrorist. But to you, what is this game all about?
I like the mechanics. I think Counter-Strike created spray control as we know it in FPS. I think that spray control and the recoil of the weapons, FPS wouldn't be what they are today if Counter-Strike wouldn't have existed. There is no doubt in my mind. People got used to complex patterns, like spray patterns. People got used to complex and complicated sort of recoils. If you start playing the game right now and you've never played an FPS shooter in your entire life, and the first thing you do is play with an AK-47 in Counter-Strike, you're gonna be like, what is this? Like, I'm terrible at this. I don't know how anybody would like this, you know? Like, to understand the wrist movements that are required, you know, for the spray to be accurate, and to understand that even if the crosshair is down here, the bullets are going here. Like, to understand that is just, I mean, you're used to Call of Duty, which is like you're jumping, like sliding, and the bullets go exactly where you have the dot in your crosshair. So it's very different, right? And I really enjoyed the mechanics. I really do. I just thought that, well, back then there was no season 2, season 3 League of Legends championship. There was no class in these events put together. It was like very scrappy, you know? So when you don't know any better, then you don't look for that. In that regard, Counter-Strike was at the very, very, very top for a long time until, I guess, Riot Games decided that esports should be larger and it should have many more people watching. It should be more mainstream and stuff like that. Until that happened, then you can argue that Counter-Strike just has built what esports is. And yeah, there's other games like Warcraft 3, there's, you know, StarCraft, but there's nothing like Counter-Strike. Like, Counter-Strike will always be in my heart as the ultimate esports experience, even when it dies.
Why is it the ultimate esports experience?
It's just very rough around the edges, and it's like, it just reminds me of the roots of what this industry is about. Right now, there's a lot of blink bullshit. Like, I'm a former professional player. Like, 10 years ago, you speak with me and you ask me, hey, it must be great to like be a pro player in the beginning of League of Legends, right? And I'm telling you, well, maybe, yeah, I guess there's some money, but nobody fucking knows me and nobody wants to know me either. You know, it's just, I'm pretty low key. Now, if I can just make a call and get courtside tickets, and that's just so stupid to me, right? Sometimes that the only thing that has changed is how mainstream the industry is and not so much what happens within it. So Counter-Strike does a good job at reminding me, you know, this is the roots. This is where everything started, you know? Right now there's a lot of blink, yes, but that's not how it always was.
So why didn't you just devote yourself fully to Counter-Strike over Day of Defeat?
Well, I think that the group I remember I was playing with, I just didn't enjoy it that much. You know, it was felt more like work than, you know, really having fun playing the game. And I just didn't enjoy it that much. And I didn't connect personally with the people from my team that much. But I've seen some of these people actually later become pretty good players, actually. But yeah, I just didn't quite enjoy that level of seriousness. You know, I always grinded pretty hard. I was not like a super diehard, tryhard about it. You know, I was serious, yes, but I always wanted to have my fun. And this team had none of that. Absolutely none of that. So I think that kept me away from taking it much more seriously. And I guess also life happens, right? So by that time, I remember I was also playing paddle professionally and I was spending a lot of time into it. So I can't really recall exactly what happened, but I think just life got in the way as well.
So you were playing Counter-Strike for many years, all the time you were at school?
Counter-Strike has always been a constant in my life. It's just a game that you just default into easily. I remember I loved playing this Warcraft 3 mod in 1.6. It was super fun. I played a lot of KZ, so like, you know, jumping and stuff like that. I played a lot of Surf. I enjoyed all the sort of modes that people created. And so, yeah, I hopped in and out for a very long time. And at some point, again, just decided to take it a bit more seriously, maybe for 6-9 months, not too much. And in those 6-9 months, became part of the semi-top throughout Spain, Spanish-speaking countries, I guess. I just knew that I didn't stick to it.
You have one of the most recognizable teams in Counter-Strike at the moment with G2, highly successful. We're in this online period where anyone could be the number one team. But I want to go back to your first team, and you signed them from Kinguin, and then they upped and left very suddenly. And this is obviously very early days for your org even. Was that one of the hardest moments you would say you've had as an esports owner?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I was at the verge of bankruptcy a couple of times, and it was my money as well, so that hurts twice. Nowadays, everybody that has an esports team, it hurts to lose money, but it's your investors' money. That's what people think. They have no care. And I'm so careful with my investors' money because it's also my money within, you know? And I remember what it's like to, like, be scrappy with those funds and that capital. And I remember back then, it was honestly just me. And actually, my co-founder who joined me a little after I created the company, Jens Hilgers, he built ESL, or he founded ESL. He is my mentor as well, and I have learned a lot from him. But I remember back then when we got into Counter-Strike, people see me and G2 right now, and it's like, okay, yeah, well, he knew everybody, whatever, you know, things are good for G2. But the reality of the matter is that year one was like so miserable. I couldn't dream of getting a great team. I had to get a cheap team that was going to overperform with a couple of changes. There was raw talent, but I knew deep down that eventually, when I could, I would improve the team without a glimpse of doubt. So I was just aiming to qualify for majors with this team. Typically, when you aim to qualify for majors, you don't qualify for majors. You have to aim to get top 8 to be sure of qualifying for majors. And yeah, with this team, I mean, I was very realistic, you know, but at the same time, you have the hope that it's going to super overperform and like win tournaments and stuff. I always say to my team, magic doesn't exist.
Now, to support this podcast, we're putting together a special Save Your Game playlist of some of our favorite songs from the games we love. We're talking songs that have been in games or theme tunes to games. So, for example, the iconic themes from Battlefield 1942 and Halo, the jaunty signature Legend of Zelda theme we all know and love. Or perhaps to Zanakan from Final Fantasy X, which I made the mistake of listening to yesterday and I genuinely gave myself a heartache because I cried so much. So, Carlos, are there any songs you'd like to include? Like something from League of Legends?
Rice.
Rice.
From,
Rice.
Yeah.
I thought you said rice.
League of Legends.
It's an edible.
No, it's
rice.
Rice.
This is from 2018 Worlds.
Yeah, he's really, really good. He's honestly one of my favorite songs.
If you out there listening have any suggestions or ideas for songs that we should include on the playlist, then please send them to our socials at Red Bull Gaming and use the hashtag SaveYourGamePodcast. The third game you're going to save is what, Carlos?
It's gotta be League of Legends.
League of Legends. League of Legends isn't just your average multiplayer online battle arena, or MOBA for short. It has become one of the most popular games in the world with over 32 million players. Surprisingly deep and tactical despite only having one major competitive map, LoL has become one of the most beloved and, at times, rage-inducing games to come out in the last decade. Players assume the role of a champion and battle against other player champions to take down their nexus and win.
League of Legends has impacted my life greater than any other game. Besides having a son and my wife, I don't think anything has impacted my life more than League of Legends simply existing.
When you were playing League of Legends initially, it was in its beta phase. So how did you even get involved that early on?
I needed something new and to make a bet, so to say, because I understood the concept of if you're in early, then you'll get the market share of the value, right, as a player. I've seen that with many games before in Counter-Strike. I saw people that were good simply because they were there early, had a lot of name for themselves and were invited to every IEM and stuff like that, right? So I knew that being part of a game early on that was going to be a large game at the end and being a top player by that time was going to do very good for me. So yeah, I started playing League of Legends. I thought that was exactly what the people wanted, actually. It just felt like a game that people wanted to play, a type of game like this. I made the bet. What was the worst thing that could happen? That the game ends up not being as great? Maybe I can still take another chance with another game, right? So I gave it a chance. And I met somebody called RNA. And this guy, RNA, he got me into the team. He knew me from World of Warcraft times. He knew I was very good there. So he was like, you know, he will get it fast, right? They were playing the game already for 2 months. And I came in a bit later. And so in 1 week, it took me 1 week to be among the best in Europe, right? In that game, in League of Legends. So I slowly became the captain figure of the team I was in. and eventually spoke with SK Gaming, among other organizations, about representing them, and the rest is history.
Do you think you picked up League so quickly because of that experience you had in WoW?
Yeah, I had 49, if I remember correctly, the number, total abilities, like with all the macros and everything in World of Warcraft. Again, I tried to play the game like creatively, right? Because I enjoyed it. The level of complexity in WoW Arena was higher than the level of complexity in League of Legends, so it was a bit dumbed down in terms of mechanics. But League of Legends is a much harder game in terms of macro and understanding of how to move around the map and stuff like that. It's a bit of the skills that I think you would need to play RTS games like Warcraft 3 or Starcraft. But what I didn't enjoy about those games is the micro aspects of managing units while keeping in mind your resources and stuff, right? It's like too much stuff at the same time. Here is your champion, right? The one champion you use. And you have four abilities and two summoner spells. There's a lot of items in the game, but that's a variable that, you know, eventually you'll get automatically. So you don't really need to, there's not a lot of overwhelming information. And so that's actually something I really like about the game.
In a way, you've kind of summed up League quite nicely to a newcomer. All I would add is it's 5v5. You've got turrets on the map that stop you from taking out the Nexus, which is your ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Carlos, you got into a team relatively quickly in your native Spain. What can you tell me about Team Dimigo? Is that how you pronounce it?
Dimigo.
Los Dientos. Yeah. Team Dimigo.
It was already an international team, by the way. It was
Spanish owned, shall we say. Like, people say G2's Spanish owned because you're Spanish,
I
right?
Guess.
But it's very much an international
brand. Dimigo was Spanish owned, yeah. And yeah, but we were there for like, what, 1 month? I didn't even have a contract with them, so... Yeah, you know, classic old school esports things.
Oh, yeah. And so you literally were just winning everything. So one of the first tournaments of its kind in League of Legends, ESL, Go for LoL, you won that 5 times. So then you very quickly get picked up by SK Gaming?
Yeah, then we had conversations with a number of organizations, and one of them were SK Gaming. And we then joined SK Gaming. And representing SK Gaming has been one of the greatest, you know, things that happened to my career. Yeah, back then it was like playing for Real Madrid. Now G2 is Real Madrid. But I was looking up to that Real Madrid at the time, and playing for them was an honor.
What is it like now beating them? Is that an honor too?
Yeah, I mean...
Although I guess it's your team rather than you personally playing, but it's still something.
No. I mean, in that regard, it's the same. Like, even if I play, don't play, own it instead, it's honestly the same exact thing. Because... Yeah, we work a lot in ensuring that we succeed, right? So, and I fucking break my bones in trying to make sure this works. So it just feels like mine. That's why when our teams win trophies, after they raise it, I will raise it too. Because it's my trophy too. I work just as much as they do for this. And all the hardships, all the bad moments, when a player has a personal issue, when the team has an issue, when you have to make lineup changes, when you need to find the money from under the rocks just to pay for the team, just to improve the team 1%, to have 1% better chance of being the best team. Just all these things just take a toll, you know, and just take a lot of time. But back then it was, you know, League of Legends was just a really fun game to play. And I was very creative. That's a good thing. When I enjoy a game, I become very creative in it, you know, and I think about different ways of playing it that are unconventional. And my way of playing it was incredibly aggressive, right? I remember back then you could get away with being over aggressive because people were not pitch perfect like today. And I loved it. I really liked it. But yeah, overall, League of Legends as a game evolved what esports is about. And I give a lot of credit to Riot Games and thinking big, thinking very big. When I went to Season 2 Finals and I was playing where Justin Bieber sings typically, I was like, okay, well, this is insane, right? And nothing like that happened before. Maybe a couple of examples, but they were too fall apart and too they were too disconnected. Like the classic weird tournament going on or in a weird game, which happens sometimes. I don't know how or why. Typically some Chinese company involved somehow. But back then it was like the only thing you would find. All of a sudden, this contrasted game with this contrasted publisher, Staples Center, bam, you know, or downtown LA playing League of Legends. That's so sick. And you could see in the banners the logo of the game you were playing and the championship you were playing. That's so sick. And they changed the game.
What was it like to be a pro back then, you know, 2010, 11, 12? Because right now you're talking to us from your G2KHQ, you've got state-of-the-art facilities, you've got amazing sponsors, fabulous PCs, and your players are well compensated for what they do, which probably makes you sometimes stay awake at night, Carlos. But what was it like for you back then being a signed player for SK?
I enjoyed a lot my job. And I enjoyed a lot the attention that comes with my job and the pressure that comes with my job. I liked also to get very creative with the way I understood my job, you know? Whereas all my teammates and everybody that I knew were just playing the game. Some of them scored, well, one of them, Fatality again, scored a very good deal with the motherboard company, right? But other than that, there was no... They didn't understand their jobs as entertainers. I did. I understood my job. I always saw myself as a gladiator that goes into an arena. And when you go into the arena, you want to win. You want to beat the opponent because you don't want to die, right? But if you lose, which can happen, you want to be the gladiator that everybody loves. So that when the Caesar does like this, he always ends up making you survive. Because the people want you alive. The people want you for the next fight. And that's the guy I wanted to be. And that meant that I don't just need to play the game. I need to be fun to watch. And I need to be entertaining outside of the game. That's why always I was, you know, trying to be unique. I always, you know, these fucking scarves. Like the first time I wore a scarf in my life, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? But then eventually, when I realized wearing a scarf eventually would become something that people talk about. And if people talk about my scarf, at some point they'll talk about how well I play. And my value as a player in the market goes up. And it did go up. I was very large for multiple reasons, but majorly because I understood my job as an entertainer. And League of Legends played a big role in ensuring that this is the case.
With that in mind then, some of the iconic moments you were involved with as a player, are they something you kind of look back on positively, even if they were negative for you in the moment? So, of course, I am Katowice, 2013. The moment when your team turns the momentum of the game, goes to take out your enemy's Nexus, and then XPeke then playing for Fnatic as a 1v1 around your Nexus, and basically backdoors and wins the game. And that moment has now been immortalized yet again in Worlds this year with the theme song taking over. There is a direct reference to that moment in the music video. It's something you're not going to be able to get away from.
And I think that's great.
Do you now think it was it has actually been a very positive thing for you?
Yeah, 100%. Like, the other day, it's funny because I was asking myself, I don't know why I asked myself these questions, maybe that's a problem, but I was asking myself, if you had to choose between only keeping your successes or only keeping your failures, what would you do? And it's funny because my mind, it's a tough choice because your successes make who you are as a successful, in this case, entrepreneur or player turning to entrepreneur, but your failures build your personality. So I came to the conclusion, if I would get rid of the failures, I would be a very dumb, successful guy. If I would get rid of my successes, I would be a very unsuccessful, tough character guy. And I would choose the latter, right? I would choose to be an unsuccessful, very tough character guy, because then I would find success with that character later on. So to your question, I love the fact that failures happened because they built what I am today. And you can't kill me. Like, the only way for me to die is to actually die. Like, it doesn't matter how many times my teams lose, how much I lose. It doesn't matter. I'll figure it out and I'll get back and I'll kick your ass. And it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Like, I don't care. Imagine somebody else wins the Team of the Year award this year. I don't give a fuck. I'll win it next time. And trust me, I will. And, you know, if another team is doing better in that game right now, well, if I want to have a winning team there, you trust me, I'll figure it out. So I'm unkillable. And it's thanks to moments like this that I'm unkillable. And we are unkillable. You two can't die.
They can't die. But at the same time, when you had that moment on stage in 2013, you were very emotional. And even at Worlds in 2019, when G2 came second, like, had an incredible time until the final went, everything seemed to crumble for you guys and shocks too. I know you have a very good relationship with one of the most iconic esports hosts we've ever had. when she's on stage with you in the interview and you found it very hard to even put it into words that were not rude. It was an emotional thing for you, so you must take it not badly, but it must affect you a great deal in the moment when it happens.
Oh yeah, I mean, the worst night of your life, that's what happens, right? Every time this, I mean, that night with Paris, my wife was with me, and I was like, the whole night I was just destroyed. I meditated for like 2 hours, went to bed at 4 a.m. or something like that, had to take an early plane. It was catastrophe. But those moments build who you are. It's that simple, you know? And League of Legends has allowed me to live moments like this, a lot of these moments, you know? I've succeeded, yes, but I don't even remember them. I'm not good with remembering the good stuff. I don't take pictures of, like, memorable moments. I tell myself, if you want those moments, then just fucking relive them again. The only reason I have some pictures with my son is because my wife makes me make those pictures. But I'm like, you know, I'd rather just have another moment with my son than have a picture that reminds me of that moment with him. I'd rather win another trophy than have a picture with me raising the trophy. Those moments can also kill you, can also kill your confidence, can kill, and partly the backdoor killed my confidence as a player. But then I regained it back, and then I regained it back in a different form, in the form of a team owner, which in many regards is a much tougher job. In many regards, it's a much simpler job. In many regards, it's a much tougher job. And it allowed me to understand that my career will be over soon, you know, and allow me to plan for the future and allow me to become more ambitious, you know, like, what do I want to be, the best player, or do I want to own something that has hundreds of the best players in some of the best games out there? And do I want to build something that when my career is over as a player, it dies out forever? Or do I want to build something that when I die is as big as ever? You know, so I think those are questions that eventually I came to the conclusion of thanks to these failures.
Well, that means the time has come. You now have to choose just one title to be enshrined into immortality. The one game you could not live without. Carlos, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Carlos Rodriguez, the game you're going to save above all others is...
League of Legends. You was probably expected after. You just look at my career and you're like, I mean, if he doesn't say League of Legends, what is wrong with him, right? But it was actually closer than people think.
Well, you heard it here first. We have our official entry into Red Bull Save Your Game. If you agree or disagree with Carlos's choice, make sure you vote for which game you think Carlos should have saved for the Red Bull Save Your Game pod via the poll on our Twitter account at Red Bull Gaming. That's it for this week. Thanks to Carlos for joining me today and inducting League of Legends into the Save Your Game podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please make sure you subscribe and rate the podcast, and feel free to leave a review telling us which game you'd induct into the Red Bull Save Your Game pod and why. You can also get in touch with us via our socials at Red Bull Gaming with your thoughts. See you next time.